Now, domestic violence may not be front page news at the moment, but it's certainly front of mind for many people, knowing that we have an ongoing issue in our community. But there are plenty of reasons to be able to keep shining a light on the issue. For the financial year to the 30th of April, there were over 23,000 new domestic violence order applications made. There have also been more than 12,000 variations to existing DVOs. Now, a DVO is sadly not the end of a terrible situation for many people. Rather, it is a potential flashpoint to something that is far more serious. For others, they never get to the point of filing a DVO application for a variety of reasons. To better explain the legal steps that someone would need to take if they are looking to remove themselves from a violent relationship, I'm joined now by former police officer, now criminal lawyer, Calvin Ganek, Managing Director of Ganek and Associates. Thanks for jumping back on, Calvin. How are you doing today?
Good afternoon, Sophie.
Yeah. So this is a really important one because I think a lot of the time, even if it's not you in the domestic violence situation, you might know someone else who is, and it can be very difficult to know what first steps you should take.
Yeah, that's exactly right. First, I guess, there's the courage to actually take some steps, and then the second point is knowing what steps are available.
Mm. So how often do you have clients coming to you with cases at the moment?
Sophie, it's domestic violence is just becoming a big part of our practice, both from a victim point of view and obviously a perpetrator point of view. So we would engage multiple new clients on a weekly basis in regards to domestic violence. And then on top of that, just the phone calls, making inquiries in regards to what to do are ever increasing as well.
Are the conversations generally along the same line and similar themes, or are they really quite unique to each particular person and situation?
I think the underlying issues have the same tone, but domestic violence can be engaged in such a varying way. In years that have gone by, domestic violence was probably known to people, Sophie, when you and I were younger, as violence, as assaults, actually physically mistreating a person in the relationship. However, we know from events, unfortunately, the Hannah Clark event and everything that's flowed from there, domestic violence comes in such different forms that can be completely silent and not visible.
Yeah, that's it. And I wonder whether or not that also means that there is now these tools available for people under those new coercive control laws and the legislation so that people do have some framework when they come, particularly if they've got the evidence that they need to back up what they're saying, which in a lot of the cases they do. It means that they can start the legal process to try and get themselves out of the relationship.
Yeah, that's right. So the new laws that have come into place specifically state coercive control. There is an argument to say that that was always domestic violence, but it wasn't front and centre, where it is now. It's clearly front and centre now. So there's so many different pieces of framework that need to be known and operate correctly to help people in domestic violence situations, from the support organisations, helping someone remove themselves from the house, emergency accommodation, counselling, even protection. I've only had a client in the last few weeks that actually hired a security guard to patrol the house at nighttime whilst she was asleep. So there's all those types of things, and then funding, as much as each government is committed to domestic violence, funding can only go so far. And we come back to prioritising that funding. And I think I've used this term with you before, Sophie. It is really difficult because you need to predict the future decision makers, whether it be police officers or even the victims themselves. When is the danger really a true danger? The police officers, then the courts, the judges, the magistrates, all really need a crystal ball to try and predict which cases are the ones most in jeopardy. And it's not an exact exact science.
No, I can imagine it's not, Calvin, and obviously the ones that then get amplified, and rightfully so, are the ones that need to shift the dial on the conversations we have as well as the behaviour. You know, you talk about how police interact with victims, and it made me immediately think of the case that we've just seen out of Western Australia with that poor young woman who was, you know, going to police and saying and trying to warn about her father, who then has gone on to allegedly not only murder his wife's best friend, but her innocent daughter, and then he also turned the gun on himself. And you're right, it's impossible to know when something's going to go wrong, but I do think it means we need to have a heightened sense of awareness, not just for the judiciary and for our police, but also for members of the community.
No, you're 100% right, Sophie. It's a community issue. It's a scourge on society. And I don't think anyone can underestimate that all the government agencies are trying to deal with this issue. It's just a very difficult issue that I don't think anyone's solved for the reasons that I say in regards to trying to predict the future. And then, unfortunately, what the rolling effect of that is that the resources, the financial backing, is inadvertently being used on matters that then in hindsight didn't need those resources attached to them. And then the ones, again, in hindsight, where there's catastrophic outcomes, haven't had the resources allocated to them. And in hindsight, those decision makers are being criticised. It's a really difficult space to get right.
There are also two sides to this legally. You have the victim, of course, and we want the victim to be central, but you also have the perpetrator, who is also entitled to representation.
Yeah, that's right. Some of the comments I'm about to say might be controversial, but there are, unfortunately...
That hasn't stopped you before, Calvin.
Like any system, there is a misuse of the system, and there are certainly cases where I act for perpetrators and you go through the whole system and they've been removed from their home, et cetera, et cetera, and the process is being used for a different purpose, perhaps in regards to
manipulation
of family court orders, contact with children in a nasty separation, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm certainly not suggesting or want to overstate that, because domestic violence is truly a problem within society. But then we've got to deal with those things, which unfortunately then undermine the true victims as well.
I know. And that actually, I think, makes people, certainly I would fall into this category, really angry that people would misuse a system that is meant to be there to help legitimate victims, that they would try to use that system to manipulate a situation because a relationship has gone badly. And look, I know that you're saying that in a very delicate way, but I hear it from my listeners all the time. I've heard from listeners myself who have felt that they have been in that situation. And I think regardless of whether it's a male or female in that case that is doing that and manipulating the situation, if it can be proven, I think they should be punished for doing it.
Yes. And then again, that those types of things are being dealt with very delicately as well. I'm not aware of a case where someone has been prosecuted in those circumstances for the obvious reasons, given the sensitivities to the subject in totality. But just in short, Sophie, I thought it might be helpful just to explain the process if someone is in need of assistance.
Yep.
So if someone is in need of assistance, they can certainly just go directly to a police station and speak to a police officer. Police have a legislated duty that upon domestic violence being reported to them, they must conduct an investigation. And in each police district, there is a VPU, you know, Vulnerable Persons Unit. And as a result of the recent inquiry, those police officers have special training to try and identify and assist victims of domestic violence in a very professional way. Those officers will take a statement, investigate the matter, and then if they believe on reasonable grounds that there is a viable application, they will make an application to the court. And seek protection of that person from the respondent. And importantly, once that matter goes before the court has extensive powers. They can apply what's called an ouster order and remove a person from a household, even if it's their house. They can have no contact. They can require no contact whatsoever, whether by telecommunications or otherwise, and require them to conduct rehabilitation as well. So from a court order point of view, it is very extensive. Removing someone before an allegation is proven from their house is quite a powerful means. But those are the steps that are available. And also a victim may obviously seek support from all the support networks that exist as well. Now, that's the more complicated aspect, because often you have a victim of domestic violence that's struggling in many ways.
Sure.
And then they're not in a position to manage themselves to organise all of those things to occur.
When we know how much pressure there is on the court system at the moment, Calvin, I guess my only question is this all happening in a timely manner? Because I can only imagine the stress that also comes from trying to remove yourself from a situation, being concerned about how the person that you are accusing of domestic violence is going to react to that, and there needing to not only be some discretion, but the safety aspect that comes with that a lot of the time as well. You know, mentioning your client who has to have, you know, a security guard to patrol the house while she's asleep. Does this all happen in a timely way, or are we really chasing our tails?
Yeah, Sophie, I think we are chasing our tails a little bit. Again, I think all the departments are doing their best, but as over in recent years, there has at least been an acknowledgement of domestic violence and what happens in behind closed doors. So there has been a significant increase in reporting of domestic violence. Mm. There was, again, going back some years, there was perhaps more of a hesitation to report domestic violence. But it's often those ones, in my experience, and I understand the statistics might support this, is when there is a catastrophic outcome, when there is a loss of life at the end of it, very regularly, that's the first contact that the relationship has with authorities, rather than it being a continuous one. There's certainly examples where there has been continuous contact and that's been the outcome. But there's also those cases quite regularly where there has been no contact with authorities before the significant event.
And as we've always said, Calvin, it knows no boundary, does it? It doesn't matter how old, it's not a socioeconomic issue, it's not an education issue, it is a people problem, and it's one that we need to keep addressing. Thank you so much for giving us some clarity around the process there. Of course, if you're listening and this brings up anything for you or maybe someone you love and you want to reach out to them, make sure that they're aware of those services that are available to them. The one that obviously springs to mind straight away is 1-800-RESPECT. You also have Lifeline available to you, 13 11 14. Thank you so much, Calvin. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Sophie. Have a good afternoon.
That's Calvin Ganek, Managing Director of Ganek and Associates. It's 23 minutes past one.